I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you'll hear part two of a speech given by CIA whistleblower Susan Lindauer, discussing prior knowledge of 9/11, payoffs, and her arrest and confinement under the USA Patriot Act. Susan Lindauer is the author of the book, Extreme Prejudice, The Terrifying Story of the Patriot Act and the Cover-Ups of 9/11 and Iraq, The Ultimate Conspiracy to Silence Truth, which came out in 2010. That'll be followed by an announcement for an event coming up on August 22nd in Torrington, Connecticut. So let's get started. Here's CIA whistleblower Susan Lindauer. This is from September 2011 in Seattle.
And we know, for example, that the Iraqis said that they also had information of a Middle East involvement in the Oklahoma City bombing and a connection between the 1993 World Trade Center attack and the Oklahoma City bombing. And that was Ramzi Youssef. Ramzi Youssef was with al-Wahari and Osama as like the original co-founders of al-Qaeda. So we know that these financial documents would have been very powerful, and it would have been a network that went from Afghanistan and Pakistan into Europe and all the way into Indonesia and the Philippines. It would have been a worldwide network. How much complicity do you think the United States had in the 1993 World Trade Center attack? We know, for example, that the FBI had infiltrated that conspiracy and was feeding it and giving it directions. Okay? And it raises questions about 9/11 as well, because what happens with an asset is that an asset is heavily supervised. See, the problem is you don't even really know what an asset is. An asset is somebody who is in direct contact with the events, who is heavily supervised and scrutinized. There is intensive surveillance on everything an asset is doing. So even if an asset does not tell their handlers and does not inform them, the situation is such that the handler is in a position to find out what it is even if they try to hide it. And then the handler gives instructions to try to manipulate it and move the situation according to an agenda. And there's no way you will ever convince me, having been an asset myself and having gone through that, there's no way you will convince me that either in the 1993 World Trade Center attack or in 2001, when, again, you have assets. These are assets. These are American assets who were supposedly on the planes. They're not just regular hijackers, jihadis. They're people who are working for the CIA. Mohammed Atta is a CIA asset, and he's a big one, apparently, from Pakistan. And it would be far more likely that he would be reporting in minute detail every single meeting that he's having with the other hijackers to his CIA handlers. And they were watching, you know, they were saying, stay in there, stay in the room, get that information, because we need you to keep telling us what's going on with this conspiracy. And that makes it even more offensive that they didn't nail the thing.
Here, someone from the audience asks if the towers were pre-wired with explosives.
Well, I believe they did. They wired it with explosives just a few weeks before the attack occurred. My belief is that they could see what was going to happen. See, in most terrorist cases, like the 1993 World Trade Center attack, the bombing of the USS Cole, first there's an explosion and it's chaotic and people are running around screaming and there's noise and sound and smoke, and then the smoke clears. Five people died in the 1993 World Trade Center attack. 12 people died in the bombing of the USS Cole. 270 died in the Alfred P. Murrah building. I believe it was 270. 19 babies died in the Alfred P. Murrah building. That was a terrible attack. But this is far exceeds that. And an airplane striking a building would not have the capability to do this. And then what about Building 7, which just kind of spontaneously came down? You know, I mean, that's quite extraordinary. It doesn't, yeah, exactly. And the Pentagon, there's no airplane. There's no airplane. How do you, it 9/11 doesn't, the official story is just like, it's so full of holes, it's just shot. Do I see a question over here?
Next, she's asked about when the buildings could have been wired.
Well, what we know is that from approximately August 22nd, August 23rd, until September 2nd, 3rd, 4th, in approximately that 10-day period, for two-hour intervals, somebody was entering that building at the hour of 3 o'clock in the morning after the janitorial trucks left the building. And I want to be really clear on this. The videos were clear enough that they were able to identify that they are not the janitorial trucks. They are not the same make and model. They're not the same color. They don't have the same markings.
Here the question has to do with, are these videotapes available to the public?
They should be. I kind of envision them being lost in some government archive, you know, conveniently misplaced. But the problem is that if the corporate media were pushing this stuff, they would have released the videos. Oh, guess what? We have these videos. Oh, golly. Gosh, here you have some information. But the corporate media will not ask these questions. They will not try to get this done. And they're compromising all of us for it. Your question is, did Iraq reveal any information about 9/11? No. Iraq had no information to give us on 9/11. Quite the opposite. After 9/11, the first Iraqi reaction to the attack was, hey, you kept telling us about this attack. You're the ones who had all the information. Why didn't you stop it? You didn't stop it because you wanted to go to war with us. But you have this on your own soul. You're going to have to answer to God for what you did. And don't cry to us about this because you did this to yourself. Let me repeat that first question. Why have more whistleblowers not come out to tell what happened? Why am I the first one really to come forward? And that was your second? Okay. What was the Oklahoma City building also wired, and what evidence would show that it was or it was not? Okay. Why am I the first whistleblower? Okay. That's actually a very significant question. My CIA handler, Dr. Richard Fuse, whom I loved very much, about 2 months after 9/11, I was visiting his office, and he said, oh, Susan, we just got the money, $13 million off the emergency appropriations for the 9/11 investigation. I'm building a house. I'm building a mansion. I'm calling my architect right now, and I'm going to be able to build a splendid mansion with this money. And I said, Richard, you know, I need some of this money for the Iraqi. This money is supposed to be used for getting Iraq's cooperation with the 9/11 investigation. I've got a source inside Iraq who's willing to give the United States information on terrorists who are moving around the country, who they are, when they arrived, what they're doing. And he said, oh, no, no, I'm not going to give you any money for that. Was it a payoff? You've never, yes, yes. Yes, it was. You've never heard anything from him, and he's never spoken up. He's never said a word. What ended up happening to me, now I'll jump to your question, is when I tried to speak up, I was then arrested on the Patriot Act, and I became the second non-Arab American ever to be indicted on the Patriot Act. I had asked to testify on Capitol Hill about Iraqi pre-war intelligence and the Iraqi peace option and Iraq's efforts to cooperate with the 9/11 investigation. 30 days after I telephoned the offices of Senator John McCain and Senator Trent Lott, because they were the gatekeepers for the commission, if you were going to testify on Capitol Hill, you had to go through them. And unlike Julian Assange, who went out to the media, he went out to the internet, and by this time, of course, the internet is much more developed, and if it had been as developed back then, I would have done the same thing. But at the time, I was not aware of how to really use the internet, or I would have done it. Believe me, I would have done it. But I was then arrested 30 days later. I woke up, I heard pounding on my door. I look out the window, there are men in flak jackets on my front lawn. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And for the next 5 years, I was held under indictment. I was arrested 6 months before George Bush's re-election fight with John Kerry. So they removed me from the political domain right at a moment where the people were starting to ask questions about 9/11, and they were demanding some serious answers. They were realizing that this had been garbage, and they were upset about Iraqi pre-war intelligence, and they wanted to know what the heck was really going on about these phony weapons of mass destruction and the whole shebang. And if you imagine if you had known that not only did the Iraqis offer weapons inspections and cooperation with anti-terrorism, and they also offered you democracy reforms. They offered you major contracts in telecommunications, hospital equipment, pharmaceuticals, transportation, non-dual use factory production. You could have had a peace dividend that would have rivaled the aftermath of World War II and rebuilding Japan, and, well, maybe not quite that extravagant, but it would have been really, if you compare what it did to the world, your war did to the world economy versus what a peace dividend would have done for the world economy, there's no comparison. So for the next 5 years, I was held under indictment with no trial and no hearing. I was locked in prison on a Texas military base for 1 year. While George Bush told all of you that pre-war intelligence was handled by incompetent assets, I was declared, quote, incompetent to stand trial on the basis, and this is very scary, this is Soviet-style attack, gulag stuff, that my belief in my innocence indicated that I could not appreciate the gravity of the charges against me or the possibility that I might be convicted. The desire to pursue witnesses and leads that would disprove the allegations and show that I was innocent of the charges qualified as a mental defect. Okay, so long as I demanded a trial, I was not fit to have one. But I would be cured of my incompetence if I would agree to plead guilty. Because if I agreed to plead guilty, it would show that I understood that you get the idea. It's crazy. Catch 22. I'm sorry? What did my lawyer tell me to do? I had a public defender. Yeah, I had a public defender, and many public defenders are good. This one was a crook. On the Patriot Act, there are some very scary rules. I told you about the secret evidence and the secret charges, secret grand jury testimony. In 5 years, I was never allowed to know who had accused me of what crime, what activities, what dates. They didn't even have to tell me the dates that the events occurred. But there was also something else that it did. It allowed the government to declare that communications between the Justice Department and my attorney were classified. And so my attorney was not allowed to tell me what kind of discussions he was having with the prosecutor. And apparently, we do know this occurred because there was a non-disclosure agreement signed on February 10th. And on February 28th, all of a sudden I was declared incompetent to stand trial. So we know there's a cause and effect between the two things. We know that the sequence of events happened very rapidly. No habeas, and I was thrown in prison with no hearing. Yeah, that's right. Obama has not changed it. How much influence did my handler, Richard Fuse, have in this case? Well, now this is a very interesting question, because my handler, I had taken a trip to Baghdad before the weapons inspections. Okay. When the United States satisfied itself, this is something, again, you don't even know. When the United States satisfied itself that Iraq was going to comply with the weapons inspections to our levels, we then handed that over to the United Nations and said, okay, you can act on this now. Within 48 hours, 72 hours of giving this to the United Nations invited Iraq to send a delegation to New York to negotiate the technical language and have the formal agreement. After the United States was satisfied, then the United Nations took action. Okay, I then, as soon as that invitation was made, I took a trip to Baghdad, and my CIA handler would later tell the FBI, in answer to your question, that he had no idea that I went to Baghdad. And it was very interesting because I had asked for some of the $13 million for the 9/11 investigation, both to pay for my trip and my expenses, and also to pay for my very high-ranking Iraqi intelligence service agent who was willing to cross over and help the United States. This was a very, 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 very big deal. Saddam Hussein had been killing all the Iraqis who cooperated with the United States, and this man was risking his life, and they would have tortured him to death. tortured him before they killed him if they got him, if they realized what he was doing. So Richard Fuse denied having any knowledge of this trip, denied that I ever asked him for the money, and pretended that I just went off to Baghdad all by myself. And why would my man in Iraq need any of the U.S. tax dollars? I mean, it was so absurd. And when we pointed this out to the FBI, how ridiculous it was, they said, oh, well, you know, that's what they want to say. The CIA doesn't want to admit that Iraq was willing to cooperate with the 9/11 investigation. And so my CIA handler just stood there and kept his mouth shut. And the whole time that I was locked up in prison, I was locked up in prison for a year. And they tried to deny that the 9/11, we'd ever given the 9/11 warnings. They tried to deny that I'd been an asset. They actually petitioned the court for the right to detain me for indefinitely up to 10 years in prison with no hearing, no hearing. Now think about this. You're being detained. I'm being detained in prison on a military base, and I don't have the right to a hearing to protest it.
And here she was just asked why she feels free to use her handler's name.
Because I think he should hang him. Why do I feel Richard Fuse should be named in this? He should be hanged for what he did. Come and get me. The question is, why do I feel free to disclose Richard Fuse's name or to disclose any of this truth to you about 9/11 or probably any of the real facts about pre-war intelligence? And as far as I'm concerned, the CIA has forfeited any rights by compromising the security of the United States this badly. The government has lost any rights to deny the people access to this information. And if they want to prosecute me, then we'll have it out in court. But we will have it in court this time. Okay, how did I win release? I had been locked up in prison for a year, and the government, the Justice Department, requested permission to forcibly drug me with needle injections of Haldol, Ativan, and Prozac. Okay? They were going to lobotomize me. They chemically lobotomized me. And they admitted in court, I have to quickly say, they admitted in court that I suffer no hallucinations, I suffer no depression, no mood disturbances. I am calm, cooperative, pleasant, smiling. I have good eye contact. And they said that until I stopped saying that I was an asset, and they did not know how long that would be, I should be forcibly drugged. And they said, the judge asked a very interesting question. He said, do you realize that the entire case is predicated that Susan had these relationships with the Iraqis? So the Justice Department is claiming in its indictment that these relationships existed. And now you're coming along and saying that she's made this up. How can you have it both ways? And of course, there was no way to do this. It was craziness. And Judge Mukasey ended up writing a decision on my side, coming down on my side, saying that on his very last decision on the bench, on the day that he retired, he released me from prison. And I was like waving to him, saying, thank you, goodbye, goodbye. I was so happy to get out of there. I was terrified for my life. And Carswell Prison definitely believed they were going to win. The chances of me winning were almost zero, but it was just so insane. It was this gulag situation, and I was like, Your Honor, I want my day in, I want a hearing. I had a very bad public defender, I thought, but I also am a very vocal person in my own right, and so I had submitted 4 petitions to the court for a hearing. And I submitted witnesses, and I described what they were going to say. And I said, Your Honor, if you don't believe me, call these people into court yourself and ask them any question you want. You know, you're the judge. You have subpoena power. Get these people in court. Sit them down and hear what they have to say. And the judge was like, no. You're going to have us say that we warned about 9/11? No. Not at all. Not going to happen.
And next she's asked when they first knew that 9/11 was going to happen.
We knew from April on. From April of 2001, I was told about this attack.
And here she's asked why they didn't report the knowledge of the attacks.
We did. I went to the Justice Department, to the Attorney General's office, and to the Office of Counterterrorism and asked for an emergency broadcast alert to try to gather intelligence and any fragment of intelligence on the attack. So we were running around, and what did save me was that I told a few friends that it was going to happen, and I told them the timing of the attack, and I told them to stay out of New York City. And those were civilians who were not tied to intelligence, and so they have come forward privately and supported me. But otherwise, and one of them actually testified in court, so I focus on his testimony because it was given under oath in a court of law, but there are others as well. So you would like a description of the case? My case was U.S. versus Susan Lindauer, and I was accused of acting as an Iraqi agent in conspiracy with Iraqi intelligence. And it was all about getting Iraq's cooperation with the 9/11 investigation. And so I was indicted for seeking Iraq's support for the 9/11 investigation. In the southern, the jurisdiction was the Southern District of New York. The federal courthouse on Pearl Street was 1,000 feet from where the World Trade Center used to stand. And the judge in my case, Michael Mukasey, also heard the financial lawsuit from the insurance companies on the World Trade Center. And so the refusal to acknowledge our 9/11 warnings was intended in part to protect Larry Silverstein and his financial claims. And I want to be really clear about this. The federal agencies that lied to Judge Mukasey were the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan, the Bureau of Prisons at Carswell, independently confirmed the 9/11 warnings because they spoke with Park Godfrey, and Park Godfrey told the staff of Carswell that the 9/11 warnings were absolutely true, the U.S. Attorney General's Central Office, and the FBI office. The FBI had confirmed the 9/11 warnings by May of 2004, 6 months prior to the 9/11 Commission report. There was plenty of time to warn the 9/11 Commission that this had been confirmed. And I even offered, I want to be really clear on this, I offered to waive my Fifth Amendment rights so that I could testify before the 9/11 Commission and that they would at least have the part about the 9/11, an accurate description of what was going on with Iraq for their report. And I said, if I will waive my Fifth Amendment rights and you can use anything that I say in a court of law against me, I will, because I wasn't worried. I mean, I really didn't believe that I had broken the law. And if you thought that I broke the law, then I believe you have a right to punish me. But you have to convict me and you have to sentence me in a fair court. You're coming from the 9/11 truth community in California, and you believe that there's a bigger conspiracy that's going on. And what is going on that we had to do this? I think that it is Halliburton. I think that it's as simple greed. I think that the military-industrial complex has hijacked our country, and they're out for profits. We call them in Washington the Beltway Bandits, and they're ripping off our country left and right. And Richard Fuse took that money, and he never paid taxes on it, $13 million, but it's a $75 billion secret slush fund for the intelligence community that is financing surveillance of American citizens. And I can tell you that no matter where you are in this country, if you're in Seattle, if you're in North Dakota, if you're in Arkansas, within a 10-mile radius, there is a private corporation that is tracking your internet, tracking your phone calls. And it's not about criminal behavior. It's about monitoring American activism, monitoring American participation, just free, regular speech. They're checking you out right now. And you could never do anything wrong at all. And they're out for you.
You've just been listening to a speech given by Susan Lindauer, CIA whistleblower and author of the book Extreme Prejudice, the Terrifying Story of the Patriot Act and the Cover-Ups of 9/11 and Iraq, the Ultimate Conspiracy to Silence Truth. Tune in next week to hear the next part of this speech. And now for the event. On Wednesday, August 22nd, several concerned citizens from the Torrington area will be hosting a showing of the movie 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out. These experts present the explosive evidence for the controlled demolition of three World Trade Center towers on 9/11, and they expose the fraud and omissions in the official World Trade Center report. A Q&A will follow the film and be led by professional engineer Wayne Costi. This not-to-miss event is on Wednesday, August 22nd from 6:15 to 9 p.m. in Torrington City Hall at 107 Main Street in downtown Torrington. It's just up the road from the Warner Theater. And refreshments will be served. So again, That's Wednesday, August 22nd, beginning at 6:15 at the Torrington City Hall. And this movie was made by 1,701 architects and engineers who all say the official story can't possibly be true because it defies the laws of physics. So I encourage you to go to this event on August 22nd and check it out. And now I'm going to tell you a little bit about where you can find my shows. 9/11 Wake Up Call airs on Wednesdays on WWUH 91.3 FM at 12 noon and on Tuesdays on WESU 88.1 FM at 2 p.m. The earlier shows are archived on the website ct911truth.org, and the more recent shows can be found at the website www.radioforall.net, and that's the digit for radioforall.net. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.